Triple M Footy is the number one football call on radio. Footy's on the radio. And your front row. Welcome to the Friday Rub.
For Macca's Little Wins app.
Triple M rocks footy.
Oh, my word, we do. Friday night footy, Etihad Stadium. Nice place to be when it's windy outside. And the Western Bulldogs take on Collingwood. Perfect Friday night entree into round 21. We're going to be speaking to Dale Morris. We're going to be speaking to Mason Cox before the big game between the Dogs and the Pies. But the team's assembled here. We've got Damien Barrett, the best newsbreaker in football. Hadn't worn a scarf, Chief, till he turned 40. He's now never seen without one on, inside or outside, Don Scott style.
Hello, Jim.
That's how he's it's scarf suddenly
weather.
Rolling.
It's scarf weather.
Yeah, but normally when people get inside and sort of the temperature of the room takes over, the scarf comes off people. But you're addicted to you. You're just rusting on.
I've got grey ones, black ones, blue ones, woolen ones, cheap ones, expensive ones.
Very, very good. The Chief's here, and he's here nice and early too. Hello to you, Chief.
Jim, looking forward to this one. We want to see the Bulldogs, what sort of form they're going to be in come September, and we know Collingwood need to answer after being very, very ordinary last week, and I'm glad Darcy Moore's back in. He might give this Bulldogs backline a little bit of trouble.
And the great two-time Brownlow Medal Premiership captain of the West Coast Eagles, Chris Juddy, has been good enough to join us. Juddy, I noticed that there wasn't a lot of time left between your arrival and us going to air. How did you actually arrive at the ground, please?
Just parked down near Crown and just done a very brisk 2K time trial to get here, so... Yeah, it was a bit of a struggle, but made it in the end. So, very much looking forward to this game as well.
And Jim, as we know with Juddy, always makes a fashion statement. Hasn't disappointed. Would you like to give us a little rundown?
No, I like it. Mm. Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of the jacket with the elbow pockets, so I like that. And it's a bit of a grey-on-grey number with a black pantaloon and a boot, which is an ankle boot, which I'm... that'd be the only thing I'd question. But because it's a jean...
which is tied up around the ankles above the boot,
above
too.
The boot.
They're European, Jim. And look, there's no doubt I've been brought in here for cultural change. Yes, that's why management's reached out. And I think, you know, it's time to raise the bar.
And Juddy, you're being critiqued by a grown man wearing a Cleveland Browns top hoodie.
And proudly wearing it, too, by the way. No doubt about it. Very, very sharp. So don't worry, the Wolfpack will get right around that, Chief.
Might be a bit too classy for them to understand, I think.
Jimmy said.
I know, European. I like that. Well, the only disappointment I've got with this is that our great friend G Lyon isn't involved in the rub right now, because it would be a brand, a fashion, and up to date off he'd be having with you. He'd be saying, "Well, that's a bit April."
Yeah.
He'd be starting to tell you that pant was maybe end of last year, all this sort of business, because he thinks he knows. None of us ever actually got a head around whether he did, but he was very passionate about it. So you and he could talk for hours. Hey, what's been going on with you, Chief? I like to know what you do during a week. You're an Olympic aficionado.
You've been watching a little bit when the time sort of suits. But
what's caught your eye? Anything special?
Okay, no, it's been okay. I've been enjoying it.
Just okay.
Well, we've had a few disappointments, Jim.
We have, but that happens at every Olympics.
Yeah, we've had a few favourites go down without a yelp, but that's okay.
Who's disappointed, Chief?
Sorry,
do you want to name names? Be a bit more specific.
Oh, no, well, you know what? Sometimes I think we put too much pressure on our athletes. I mean, the way that we had built up the Campbell sisters was that they were unbeatable and would just win gold and silver.
Well, they were ranked 1 and 2 coming in.
Yeah, there's a world champion going into it and a world record holder going into it.
Mm. So you'd expect them to go
1 and 2. Well, you got a lot of athletes from around the world. We're talking about thousands of athletes aiming at this one meet to peak at their very best. And they, Jim, didn't find themselves on the podium.
No, I'd noticed that. But, Chief, I would have thought if you are a world record holder and a reigning world champion, you've got every right to expect to do
well. Same happened with Cameron McAvoy. Goes in and he didn't even get a look in.
At least we scrounged the gold medal out of that
event. What about that? Kyle Chalmers, seventh on the turn and just reeled the field in. And I don't think the moment was quite captured as well as it could have been during the call. But I thought that was as good a performance as I've seen for a long, long time. That was John Sieben-like, where it came from the clouds.
Are you more of a swimming aficionado, I know, than I am, Chief?
Not really, Jim.
The Force would be very keen that I say it properly. Is that the blue riband event in swimming, the 100 metres free?
Look, it is, but because I'm not an aficionado, as are you... not as much as the men's 100 in the track and field. And we all wait for the track and field. That's what we really want to watch. Right. I mean, that's what I'm hanging out for.
Yeah, second week. What about you, Juddy? Have you been casting a discerning eye over the Olympics?
I'm yet to really get into it. I'm a bit more like the Chief, looking forward to the track and field. But certainly hard not to get emotionally involved with Kyle Chalmers' victory. Yeah. And seeing the footage of his schoolmates was... was pretty special, and that certainly sparked my interest.
Do you remember his old man, Warrior?
Yeah. Yeah, not well, but I remember it. Yeah.
He was built like a brick outhouse, wasn't he?
He was a big bastard. We always get one of them purple. Every Olympics we get a swimmer, especially, just out of nowhere, win a gold medal, it seems.
Yep.
Just one that's not ranked and not particularly well-known or backed. Like Mack Horton, everyone knew, was a chance to win a gold medal in one of his three events because he is going to be a superstar, and it was only a matter of whether he did it this Olympics or next. But Kyle Chalmers, I'm not sure anyone thought was in that category.
I was just reading the backstory today. It was only 18 months ago that he was forced to make a decision on what he wants to do and stood out of school in year 12 and didn't even tell his schoolmates. I love the backstory that he lined up in an Australian final 18 months ago, and big James Magnussen and McAvoy didn't know who he was, didn't look at him, didn't say hello, and not that they were being rude, they just had no idea. To acknowledge a 17-year-old.
Have you got a feel for how serious he is about playing AFL footy, or is it just more of a pipe dream?
Well, he was forced to make the decision.
He made the choice. He said he was keen, but he's injury prone.
What about the coach who said you can either be a domestic star or a global star? I would argue that outside the Olympics, the spotlight on our swimmers isn't quite as strong as it is for 30 weeks on an AFL footballer. Purple. I don't think swimming has the global cachet that maybe the coach thought it has.
Well, even
I reckon he can cash in now, though, surely, can't
he? I think there was a big car manufacturer that had given him a top-range car, and he's got deals with Adidas.
If he's a very good AFL footballer, and we've got two of them sitting in here, who have absolutely raped and pillaged the industry for more cash than anyone's ever seen...
I played when money wasn't much of an issue. Jim, it exploded after I'd retired.
Is that what happened?
It was never about the money for me, Jim. You know that. It's about the relationships. It's about the relationships.
It's about the recycling.
About the community work, Darren.
There is only one true plunderer in this box, let me tell you.
I'm not sure, even if you're an Olympic gold medalist, unless you end up in Ian Thorpe's category and win 6 or 7, that you're going to earn as much as a very good AFL footballer. Are you? Maybe again, I'm showing ignorance.
No, you're swim probably
meets.
Right.
They have those good swim meets around the world now where they swim for cash.
Short course stuff.
Yeah, a lot of that. And I reckon if he went on the circuit and won a few of those, he's going to make a healthy living, combined with a heap of sponsors and the like. I think he's got a chance to make himself a huge
I'm not denigrating his performance, by the way, for a second. It was extraordinary, and we're very, very proud of him. It's nothing to do with him, actually. It was just the coach talking about the global superstar bit. I'm thinking, outside of Michael Phelps, name me one other swimming global superstar that rolls off the top of your tongue, outside of our blokes that have just won.
Probably Ryan Lochte, who keeps running second, getting gold
medals in
relays.
What about the Canadian commentator? Did you get across that?
Yeah.
Just didn't realise that it was not... Ryan Lochte was actually Michael Phelps, so he called the greatest upset in swimming history.
And then at the end of it said, what's
Well, at the end of it was about a 5-second pause where he just realised that he'd actually had the wrong bloke in the wrong lane.
For 200 metres.
And then said, I'm sorry, I got the lanes wrong.
Was no one working with him, Jim?
There was.
I shouldn't laugh, Chief, because there, but for the grace of God, go us all. And I have cocked that many things up, it doesn't matter. But it is, if you haven't heard it, you must get online. I think it's on the Triple M website. It is hilarious.
Well, talking to Nick Riewoldt, was it last week, Jim, or the week before, about him and Daley Thompson? It was last week, wasn't it, about Daley Thompson? Juddy's quicker than Riewoldt over 400 and 100, aren't you, Juddy? Well, weren't you?
I'm not familiar with Nick's times, Purple, but you were asking me on Monday.
I was.
I'm intrigued. My times were.
So do it again. For the 100 metres, you clock...
Got a 50 flat, 50.0, and 11...
For the 400.
For the 400. Yep. Yeah, that would be a pretty slow 100 metre time.
Yeah, the 100.
And 11.4 for the 100.
See, that's moving, Jim.
And that's when you were playing footy, so that's when you were carrying
footy
weight? No,
that was when I was about 16, so it was quite young.
Okay.
But I think you find any footy player that thinks they're a chance to make it in running, like... even Blixarves is the best runner to have ever played our game, but he wasn't good enough to be
an Olympic
sort of athlete. Yeah. They're pretty serious operators.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Speaking of footy, we must get on to this game tonight. And Trav Cloke, every Collingwood supporter who's in the car purple will be asking the question about what's going on with him.
Yeah.
It's something you've been across right from the start. He's out of the team tonight. Where's it at?
Well, he will seek a trade at the end of the year, Jim. And whatever Neil Barm wants to say, and you always take with it a grain of salt as to what Neil Barm says about people at his footy club. And that's what he does. And he's happy to present
he's got a positivity. The company flag.
He does. But what will happen, Jim, as a result of the third omission, which happened happened officially yesterday of Travis Cloke this year is that he will be seeking that trade. And what we have learnt in the past 48 hours is that there is, and Jody's been over this actually, I think, more than some of us, because he is aware that there is interest, significant interest. There's three or four clubs that I now feel that is the case.
Five CJ broke it, didn't they?
You did.
5CJ Radio, so it was a big story, and it one you doubted early on, but now you've done your research and you're on board. But
5CJ Radio.
What is it?
5 Chris Judd Radio. What the hell is that?
So it's not an actual legitimate radio station, Chief. It's just
more your
of a
brand,
metaphorical.
Nice.
Just doing
nice.
Part of the brand building process. But
talking about himself, not in the third person anymore. He's gone to brand.
Exactly. He's branding himself.
Yeah.
But in fantasy, did many weeks ago, and the Western Bulldogs, who you threw up as a possibility of a mix, I can add to that by saying they are one of the four clubs certainly considering something with him. There's no offer there as far as I can tell, but they are contemplating, Jim, the fact that Jack Redpath is going to miss till halfway through next year.
At least.
That they are after Michael Hurley, and the way I've had it put to me is they could get both Hurley and Cloke under a certain scenario that would obviously assist in that part of the ground for them.
Well, if you read not too far into, Juddy, what Nathan Buckley said in his pressers in the recent losses that Collingwood have had, he hasn't missed the forward line once.
No.
Every time he said forward line didn't function, forward line was poor, forward line didn't work hard enough. So,
and it's been hard not to agree when you've watched them play poorly, don't you think?
Yep. So therefore, if you Trav and his management, you're reading pretty clearly into that I'm the one in the crosshairs every time.
I would have thought so, and it probably looks like Collingwood, you know, you'd say Trav's probably got two good years left in him, or I think he does, and after that would be a bonus. Doesn't look like Collingwood are going to be competing at the real pointy end of the season in that time period, so it makes sense for both parties to part ways and have another go at it.
What do they get? Will they get anything for him, or the joy just to be that he's somewhere else and will pay a bit of his salary and create some room?
If Collingwood can get a buyer, and we're speculating here, but his wage goes down from the big money of this year and the previous three to next year being the fifth year of the deal to about $500,000. It's still a fair bit of money for the way he's playing right now, but if Collingwood could get someone, some team to pay, look, probably 300 of that, I reckon they'd absorb maybe 200 just to get him out, because that's where it's at now, Jim. And again, they won't be saying this publicly. Nathan Buckley, then probably post-match tonight, will be saying something different to that. But he was shattered by what happened during the week when he was told that he was out for a third time. And I've used the term, it is a tipping point for him in seeking a future.
All right, before we finish on this and get to a break, let's use the Western Bulldogs. Is he going to play good football for them?
It's hard to say. I don't think the style of football at Collingwood's helped him, put it that way. Travis, for me, was always at his best when he was leading up the ground and being that hit up, and he'd make long, searching leads to the wing, almost the way Nick Riewoldt used to play.
Yep.
And his strength was on the lead, because his strength isn't so much in bodying and getting that long ball, and he doesn't have much of a leap left on him. I don't know whether the modern style actually suits him, Jim, to be brutally honest. So Trav's going to have to almost reinvent himself, I think, to fit into a team on a consistent basis and become a good player again.
So to this team we're going to watch tonight, are they any fit?
I'm not convinced, but that's just my opinion.
I think it can happen, but I think the big part of the transaction is Travis needs to change the way he prepares and his body shape and the way he plays. And I still think he's at an age where he can do that. But if you look at some players who are constantly adapting throughout their career, and I look at a Sam Mitchell who's done it even before he got drafted, he had to do it to get drafted, Travis probably hasn't adapted as well as other guys to what the game demands.
When you say prepares, are you questioning how he has presented this year? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think he needs to lose a lot of upper body weight.
Right.
He's not carrying fat. Yep.
How much could he lighten off, do you think?
I reckon he could lose 5 kilos.
Yep.
And that would significantly change his ability to run. And that's what needs to change for him to be an effective player in the modern game. Yep. I'd be doing no upper body weights if I was him, concentrating on some other things and really seeing if he can adapt to become a modern-day footballer.
Drew Petrie did exactly that, I think it was about 3 years ago, for the exact same reason. It's just, I remember seeing him first day of the pre-season and it had all gone. No. I thought he'd had some sort of disease. So what the hell do you think you're doing? But he said, I just can't cover the ground at whatever he was, so his weight had to come down.
It's worked.
We need to get to a break. We've got Chris Judd here. We've got the Chief, who never went down that path of playing or post-career. In fact, sort of violently went the other way. Lots of talk about Justin Lepich purple and the fact that he won't be there next year. The speculation saying that that is where he's headed with the Brisbane Lions. Then there's the talk swung to Brett Ratten maybe being the man to replace him up there, which is interesting given the former CEO of Carlton. He's now the CEO of Brisbane, Greg Swan. I know you've got some thoughts on that, Juddy. Might to get that from you in just a sec. But Clarko today had a bit to say on this topic, yeah?
Yeah, he did. And he said basically back off. While Lepich has still got three matches to go, and Brett Ratten is with him at Hawthorn just to leave that until something is done officially. And he got pretty worked up over it.
I think it's a bit disrespectful that we're even thinking about who he might be going to and what he's going to be doing. You know, he needs to assess his own situation, but you know, there's not a coaching vacancy at this point in time, and I don't think it's fair that anyone speculates one way or the other what's going to happen there.
We've got a game they could, strange enough, win, I think, against Carlton this week, Brisbane. Juddy, you were at Carlton when Greg Swan moved on Brett Ratten to bring in Mick Malthouse. Could you envision a scenario where Greg Swan could work with Brett Ratten?
No, I think it's very unlikely that Rats and Swanee will be coach and CEO of an AFL club together again.
It was that bad, was it, in the end?
Oh, look, it was. I think that's how most coaches that get sacked from a CEO, I think it's be strange if they ever went back to the same well again. But yeah, certainly, you know, those guys had a good working relationship while they were going, but by the end of it, as I said, I felt it was unlikely they'll work together again.
Okay.
Would Swanee at Brisbane be on the coaching subcommittee?
CEOs have a say as a rule. And I won't say every single time there's been a subcommittee that they have been, but they certainly have a large say in what goes on, particularly someone like Greg Swan, who has been put up there by the AFL, effectively. And while it hasn't worked out, because the club hasn't got better under his watch, and that's not a criticism of him, it's just the task is huge beyond one CEO. But I would think he would be, to answer your question.
It would be a very interesting scenario if Swanee was to perhaps say, well, I'll sit out of this and let you guys do your due diligence on all the next wave of coaches. And if the coaching committee came back and recommended that Rats was the one, would he then veto it?
But this is from both parties. I mean, I don't think Rats would work at a club where Swanee was CEO. And
probably
I don't think Swanee as CEO would hire Rats. So I think it's mutual.
The fact that Ratten has now gone to work under Clarkson at Hawthorn, from the outside looking in, it appears as though it's a good move, working under Clarkson. It's almost a prerequisite to getting a job. Did you see enough when he was coach in his own right that 4 or 5 years down the track that he could still be capable of doing it again?
Yeah, look, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, 5 years' time, every senior AFL coach will have had to have worked at Hawthorn for a period of time the way it's going. But they've certainly got a really good track record of spitting out senior coaches that have done a good job. But the other interesting one is if Chris Fagan will ever get seriously approached to coach. He's coached his own footy team in Tasmania. He's obviously an A1 operator and knows footy and knows administration. So it'd be interesting to see if he gets targeted as well.
Yeah, his name has sort of done the rounds in recent times, and he keeps saying no, but I sort of share your views on him. He does fit the bill in many people's
eyes. Scott Pendlebury playing, by the way. There were some whispers that he might be laid out for Collingwood. Both team sheets are in and no changes to either side, so Pendlebury playing tonight. I think Brett Ratten, getting back to the topic, Purple, if you look back over his coaching record at Carlton, it's actually one of the more staggering sackings, isn't it? Because when you look at what he achieved there with, I mean, the great man parked here was head and shoulders their best player, but there weren't many with him, to be honest. It wasn't an A-grade list, put it that way. And yet the achievements that he had at that club, you could argue, were actually bloody good.
Correct. It was a plus 50% strike rate over the duration, and we're talking about more than 100, well, and truly more than 100 games. And had the Mick Malthouse availability not been there, had the relationship with Greg Swan not been what it was, he would have gone longer, and who knows? Who knows? He may have still been out of the system as we speak now, but it was circumstances that got him as much as anything, Jim.
So the interest for me then, Juddy, is the relationship with Greg Swan, because unless Carlton are different, and they might be, normally it's the board that appoints the coach of a footy club. So I would imagine a strong board would turn around to the CEO and say, if you want to keep the coach, that's a big if, by the way, but if you want to keep the coach, you better find out a way of working with him, because we want him to stay.
Oh, no, I think that decision was a line between all groups. I don't think there was no personal issue between those two. I just think you know, moving on from a senior coaching job is a pretty painful process for
for
both parties.
So at that time, do you think at the time and now, I might be asking the same question Purple did a moment ago, that this is a bloke who should re-enter senior coaching at some stage somewhere?
Yeah, I think so. I think he should throw his hat in the ring. I don't know what his personal situation is like at the minute and where his head's at. Obviously, he's had a huge amount go on, which unless you've been through that, you wouldn't even be able to comprehend what that does to you. But if he does have the interest, certainly the skills he already had combined with the learnings that he would have had at Hawthorn, I think at some stage he'll throw his hat in the ring again.
Because, Chief, in the modern era, virtually no one gets a second shot at it.
No, and which is bizarre because you would think at face value that second time around, having the opportunity to learn from your mistakes, sit back and reflect and say, well, what did I get wrong? What were the things that really cost me? To then go to another environment, which is regarded as one of the best, to get the intellectual property from that environment to take with you to another club second time around, you think you would be so much better prepared.
Yep.
But it's like you get tainted, don't you? You're tarred with the wrong stuff and you just can't get it off.
Michael Voss is another example of that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, admittedly, he didn't have the same record at Brisbane that Rats had at Carlton, but he's another one that I looked at when he left and thought, well, surely it's only a matter of time before he maybe was too early going into senior coaching, so he goes back and becomes an assistant. A-grade bloke, never, you know, no question of any of that. You know, he'll re-enter the fray at some stage.
Even Sanderson, he was in a prelim in, what was it, 14?
212,
Or 212, was it? And then, you know, a game away from the finals the year after and was resold. I mean, that's, you know.
And when you talk about Ratton as looming as the as a favourite, and he will be a favourite for any vacancy, but I think we on the outside now, when you sat through a coaching subcommittee when you found Brendan Bolton, didn't you, as a Carlton person at the time, Jim? But I just feel that we don't know because the Phil Walsh appointment initially, and then the Dom Pike replacement, and also to the Luke Beveridge candidacy at the Bulldogs. They were not talked about as being top 10, top 12 potential candidates at those respective clubs at that time. So I think clubs are looking for something different. I think the Chris Fagan raising of his name by Chris Judd there. Chief, you know Fagan really well.
Brilliant
operator. Do you think it is something that he might want to do at this stage of his very long and successful football administration career?
To be brutally honest, I'd have to sit down and have a chat with him about that because I don't know if he still has a passion for coaching. I think he's comfortable in the role he's in. He's got a great relationship with Alistair Clarkson and there's a whole team of them that have worked together that have enjoyed so much success. It would be difficult to break that up, and I think he would be, if you were leaving, you'd probably want to take a few with you, a few of the people that you've worked so closely with over the journey. So whether he's prepared to do that at this stage of his career, I don't know. He might be nice and settled and just happy to stick to the football manager's role, which he's done so, so well, and he oversees all the coach. He oversees everything in the football department at Hawthorn, and he's been absolutely brilliant.
The two that you mentioned, though, unless my memory of history is wrong, and it often is, Purple, they were appointed in the middle of three or four other coaching jobs being appointed, or at least two or three. Yep. So you can jag one out of nowhere when that's the case because you've got three jobs to fill and therefore probably 15 or 20 candidates. My feeling with Justin Lepich, if he is to leave Brisbane, is that that will be the only coaching move, I think. Is there another possibility anywhere in the AFL? I don't think there is.
What we all know to never say never, don't we, as a possibility, but even he is contracted too.
Well, I know but if they pull the plug and say, righto, we've got to move on, then I can't think, you know, the teams down the bottom, you've got John Worsfold, special circumstances, locked in and loved.
Yeah. Ross Lyon's got 4 years
exactly
to run.
The same thing, so there's no problem there.
Peggy O'Neill endorsing Damien Hardwick as strongly as she did this time last week. So, I think we removed that situation. So, Nathan Buckley's got a contract for next year, and despite this being a bad year, we might talk about that closer to the start of this game, but the 8 wins he's got, he wants at least one more before the year's out, but I don't see even 3 bad losses changing him being there as well.
When you look at the current coaches, though, aside from, say, Ross Lyon at Freo, John Worsfold, who you just mentioned, John Longmire at Sydney, Paul Ruse at Melbourne, who's about to hand over to Simon Goodwin, they all played sort of in that 80s onwards era. They're the older brigade. There's really only Rodney Eade as that older, experienced coach who's been to a couple of clubs. Everyone else is slanted towards the younger coach, the sort of the modern generation. So I guess that, in a sense, is one of the things that probably holds back against going to coaches a second time around, as you were saying before, Jim. So it's just really interesting to see the way the shift has been in the coaching ranks.
Yep. And if you look at American sport, it's the complete opposite.
Yeah. Yep.
Often well into their 70s and often unbelievably good still. By the time we get to this stage of a Friday night, the pack are ready for it. They've had enough. They like the footy talk and they like hearing about the Olympics. They, of course, like everything we do. That's why we rate so highly. But they do love purple, this segment that has become a staple on a Friday night. Hit it.
Ship the hell off.
Ship off.
Ship off.
Ship off.
Find a little boat and ship the hell off. It's a little different tonight, Jim. Right. There's some odd ones in here, but just a few things that caught my attention. I think we all would agree that Tuesday the 9th was a bit of a debacle. Census night.
Oh.
Between the federal government, the Australian Bureau of Statistics, and the service provider, IBM, something went horribly, horribly wrong.
It did.
But if you're like me and you're sitting up half the night trying to get on and do it, given that they were still tweeting and running ads saying you have to do it tonight after the website had been closed down, you probably have every right to be a little bit peeved. I then doubled up and started to do it the next day, Jim.
And?
Had the same issues.
Oh, no.
And then you see, you'll be threatened with a fine if you don't do it.
$180 a day.
Absolutely ridiculous, these flogs. And apparently they expected these denial of service cyber attacks. And heads are going to roll, but as far as I'm concerned, they can all ship off, Jim. I just thought it was one great debacle.
I agree.
What else should I talk about next? Well, let's go to the Olympics.
Yes.
I'm a little concerned with the network that's providing the coverage. Now, you like to see different events. You like a variety. And everyone has different tastes of what they like to watch in the Olympics. So I'm flicking between 7. And for whatever reason, Channel 7-2 has dropped off Fox and they brought in 7-Mate on 188 instead of 137, which was 7-2. So if you want to watch 7-2, you have to go out of Foxtel, back to your free-to-air, which is too hard and just don't do it. But I would like to think if I'm watching something on Channel 7, then I go to 7-Mate to watch something else, I'm not going to get the same shit, Jim. And yet sometimes I do. And that is so annoying, Channel 7 can ship off and get it right, please. And then their argument might be, well, you've got the 7 app where you can watch what you want. I don't want to watch something on a tiny handheld device, Jim. I'd like to watch it on my big TV.
You're using that for something.
Is that asking too much?
No.
Give us a spell, 7. Speaking of the Olympics, while we're on it, we all know the magnificent efforts of Mack Horton to win the men's 400 free, which is outstanding. And he beat old mate Sun Yang,
the
Chinese man that had a little spell for whatever reason, may have taken a prohibited substance.
Check
and
it passed.
But he's back in it.
Yep.
And then apparently Mack had a little niggle at him and all of China's turned on Mack Horton. Mm. Well, today Chen Xinyi was the first Chinese swimmer to receive a positive test in the Olympics. The first swimmer, in fact, to test positive. She came fourth in the 100 butterfly final. So I think the entire Chinese population can ship off for attacking our Mack Horton. That just doesn't wash.
He got abused, Chief.
In the world of...
He shipped all of China.
There's a few there, too. There's a few there. I don't know if you can imagine this happening. Have you ever been... And in fact, I know you have, Jim. You're always running late. You're going to the airport... Flight closed.
That is, yes.
Well, this happened to a gentleman in Spain. Got to the air bridge and the plane had left. So what did he do? He jumped off the end of the air bridge, 3 metres down onto the tarmac with two bags over his shoulder, sprinted after the plane, waving to the pilot to get his attention.
No.
And what happened? They allowed him on the
no.
plane. Anywhere else in the world, including Australia, you get shot before you get anywhere near that plane.
That's it.
What is wrong with Spanish security, given what's happening around the world at the moment? Can you believe that happened?
No, I can't believe it.
Extraordinary. So the whole of Spain can ship off too.
Jim once made a phone call to stop a plane from leaving.
Yeah.
In a car.
This bloke,
that is true.
This bloke couldn't be bothered with a phone call. He just said, I'll chase it out in the tarmac.
He didn't quite.
And finally, Jim, now this one's close to your heart.
Yes.
Police have released an image of a man wanted for theft. He stole a $60 penis pump from a luxurious sex shop, Jim. Now, apparently, he said he was just browsing, but then when he left the shop, the alarms went off. And the image they've released, this bloke looks like the sort of bloke that hangs around sex shops and steals penis pumps. So he is just a sicko that should ship off.
What's he look like, sir?
Oh, not good. He's just a grub.
He's thumped a penis pump.
Yep.
Oh, come on.
That might do us, Jim.
I think that might. Is there any way we can be hated on by the Chinese nation? Can that happen to us, Purple? You're more tech savvy than I am.
We might get away with it on a Friday night football coverage, Jim.
Yep.
Mack Horton didn't get away with it.
No.
No.
Even though the truth is 100% his defence.
And he got backed up by a US swimmer too, who did just as good a job.
Yeah, and a French swimmer who said that old Sun pisses purple.
He said he saw it, didn't he?
Yeah. I tell you what, even though what's happening in France is obviously deplorable and everything that's obvious within that sentence, I do love the Frogs. They just don't give a stuff.
Nah.
They just pin their ears back purple and say exactly what they want and don't give a damn about the consequences. And for me, that is absolutely brilliant. Hey, let's talk quickly about... actually, I'll hold on to the PA. We'll get to that in a moment. Dane Swan, you touched on last night, saying that potentially he's not playing footy again, and there might be a reason for that.
I think it's the foot, Jim. He was seeing a specialist today, and he's given himself, as we know, via the interview we had with him this time last week, until the end of round 22. So the week between 22 and 23 is when he would announce it, and I'm just not hearing one thing that says to me he's going to go around again next year. Look, let's wait for him to make that decision himself, and he still has got time to change whatever is in his mind right now, but there's no one that I'm hearing and speaking to around the situation that says he will be playing.
So am I right in saying that if he doesn't play, he will still receive money next year because of the injury payments? Is that right?
Yeah, it is. It's because that what would happen there, Jim, it's almost as clear-cut a case you can get under the way you can earn half your last contract. So Dane Swan would be on, let's go with about $750,000, $800,000 this year. Because of the broken foot in round one, if he was to retire, and it is so bad, which it's meant to be, would be career-ending. Under that arrangement, he would get half the rack rate of that contract to actually not play. So that's how it works.
You get one year's payment. That's it.
Means you've got to never be able to play footy again, though.
So he wouldn't be able to play locally with his mates or anything like that?
Well, not, you know, if you go for that, you're saying that even once it's healed, you still wouldn't be able to play footy again. I may have done a little bit of investigating, Jim, in my
AFL
own personal
level
circumstances.
Or at any level.
Any level. It's saying that body part is so shot,
yep,
it's physically impossible.
But
you can play football at any level.
If you get the money up front, which some people have done in the past, there's nothing actually stopping you from exploring a local football opportunity the following year.
You may have found some new healing techniques, perhaps. Purple that have Beyond changed your the, circumstances.
Yes, yeah. I think that might have happened to one of your teammates.
Perhaps a West Coast player who's managing to play with a very dodgy shoulder, which is it's good to see Adam Hunter still running around there in the Wild West.
Not mentioning
after receiving a small payout.
But Jim, the way it works with Swan too, because he's come off the big money and because he now can't, and he would be realistic too, he cannot be offered the big money that he's been on next year given what he's been through this year. He will actually possibly get more to not play. Now, again, his love of football, and we heard it last week in the interview, is still pretty strong. And if he can, and if his foot's good, and if it fixes itself up quicker than it has in recent months, he's a chance to play. But the financials of it are such that it will be more lucrative for him to not play.
Just looking at the Wolfpack here, Purple. Huge ass, put sunnies on Juddy's head and he'll resemble Alex Perry. Because we did
That's
have a
bad.
Photo of Juddy put up online. Teddy Wheeler says, no, actually, Chardy says, come on, Juddy, it's Etihad, sorry, on a Friday night, not the spice market. there's actually some nice ones here. Yeah, if Purple's copping it over his scarf, says Ash Harvey, he can always claim it's European.
Come on,
A European boot, something you never thought you'd hear on Triple M footy. And I like this one here up a bit further. Well, not good for you, Purple, but
Odd
Leslie Keefe says, I propose that the Chief grab one end of Purple's poxy scarf, Juddy grab the other end, and they have a tug of war.
Chief could do it with one hand.
I think that's a bit harsh. Hey, Dale Morris has been good enough to join us from the Western Bulldogs. Welcome to you, mate.
Thank you.
Had you in on the rush hour during the week, and it was very nice chatting to you. You've been a great supporter of the show over the years, but you didn't mention anything about a hamstring and not playing.
No, I love it. I think you got the weeks mixed up. Wasn't on this week.
Was that last week?
It could have been. It could have been.
Where,
you know
where
what
have
happens?
I seen you then?
Oh, no,
the
you know
Sunday
what happened? It was probably Matthew Boyd, because Matthew Boyd and I get confused all
no,
the time.
No, you came in on the Sunday footy show.
Yeah, Sunday footy show.
Yeah, so
that's
you didn't
right.
mention you had a hamstring.
No,
issue.
No, I felt good. Felt good then.
Oh, did you?
But they developed
yeah,
overnight.
If you got a hamstring, you normally feel good the next morning. I noticed you kept it from us. So you're not out for long.
No. It was more a tightness thing. And when you're 33 and say your hammy's a little bit tight, they start jumping a bit. But short week, so it was safer to not play this week. But it'll be fine.
It's interesting, Dale, we were chatting just before we came on air, talking about whether you'd be in the coach's box tonight or not. And sometimes you might be, but you actually are keen to sit with the other players in the stand, and there is some education to be had up there.
Yeah. I really enjoy sitting down with the young players coming through, especially the ones that play in the back half, hopefully, and play with me over the years. Just to point things out, because at times you can track the footy and miss out what's going on outside of that. It's like you're watching it on TV. You want to see how even the opposition sets up, how our guys are setting up, and whether they're doing the things that we want them to do.
From a team perspective, when you're watching tonight, in the first 5 minutes of the game, what things do you hope to see to make you feel comfortable that the boys are switched on?
The biggest thing, and it's one of the easiest things, I guess, is just intensity, especially around the footy. If our guys are cracking in and making it hard for Collingwood tonight, I'll know they're on. No easy balls for the Collingwood midfielders. Hopefully they don't get the footy on the outside. That means our guys are doing the work on the inside. And if our forwards can snag a few, that'd be nice. But, yeah, it's that first contest when the ball goes up. It's whether our guys are on or not.
The face on the cover of the Record today, Marcus Bontempelli. It's hard to believe that he could have put together a better 55 games to this stage, is it?
Yeah, it's pretty special. I remember when he came in, I think he's 194 centimetres around that, and I'm 190 centimetres. I used to be a key back, now I play back pocket, because the boys, they're getting bigger, taller, stronger, and he's an inside midfielder that can play centre-half forward as well. So, yeah, he's got some special traits, and he's a ripper bloke too around the club, and he just gives everything for the team.
Is he ready for the captaincy when Bob does officially give it up?
Oh, he would definitely be one of the contenders. He's very switched on, mature beyond his years, so he'd definitely be up there as one of the candidates for sure.
Bench of the week with Brett Montgomery departing. How big an effect on the team do you think that will have now that it's played out the way it has?
It will have an effect. We've had a bit go on this year, so I don't think it will affect the group that much that it's going to impact the game. Obviously, we've got relationships with Monty. He's been at the club for a long time. Some of us even played with him. But when it comes down to business, the boys won't let that distract them. They'll deal with that during the week if they need to talk to people or whatever they need to do. But yeah, as for tonight, I don't think it's going to be a distraction at all for the players.
You talk about things that have gone wrong throughout the course of the year. First half of the season, the Bulldogs' form was as good as anyone, I thought. But it's amazing how you get a few injuries and all of a sudden the football community says the Bulldogs' chances are gone. Internally, I suspect you probably think a little bit differently because you've still got a lot of quality players that are playing and probably one or two that will come back at some stage.
Yeah, definitely. Those guys would have been nice to stay on the park. You know, Murph, the obvious one.
Yep.
But when the guys have fallen down with injury, I think Murph put it really well. You move on, but you don't forget. And we've had guys step up in those roles and done beautifully well. And internally, we've always believed in our systems and our structures, and Bevo's big on that, you'd know that. Yeah. And he is great at just building that belief within the group. And it is unfortunate to get injuries, it happens, but the guys that have come in and how they're learning to play in the VFL is exactly how we want them to play in the AFL. So it all marries up really well.
I think when Collingwood have played their best footy this year, their tackle pressure's been really elite. And I think of you guys playing and you flick the ball around a lot by handball. When you come up against a team that's been tackling really well, do you try and kick and mark a bit more than usual to take that out of their game, or do you just play business as usual?
We'll worry about our game. It'll be business as usual. We do. We will make note of that during the week with our opposition analysis and stuff. And I think Collingwood's best pressure game was probably against us at the G, and that was a really tight game that we just got over the line with, and they were really, really good that day, and we're expecting that again tonight. So we just need to be clean in the contest and make good decisions with the ball. If that means it's a quick kick forward or you can handball the ball out, it's up to those guys in those moments, in those situations, to make those calls. And that's what we practice during the week. And you talk about belief, they've just got to believe in what they know and what to do.
Why 38? You're a great player that's been there for a long time. I'm sure you would have had options to come down in jumper number. Is there a special significance in the number 38 for you?
No, there isn't, unfortunately. I wish there was a good story behind it.
Because it's an odd sort of number.
Yeah,
or
well,
an
it
even
is.
Number, but you know what I mean.
No, it is. It's a high number, and typically guys, when they get the opportunity, will go for a lower number. But my theory was behind it that the Bulldogs were good enough to pick me up, and they gave me that number. So it's a bit of an honour to be given a number. So I've just kept that.
I love it.
Made it your own.
For what it's worth, and my opinion means nothing, I love it. I reckon it's one of the great wanks of football that players go down to low numbers. What the hell does it matter? It's on your back anyway. You can't see the bloody thing.
Exactly.
Make it your own.
Exactly right. Make it your own.
Some players are superstitious and have favourite numbers,
If there's a family reason, say your dad played in five, so you played, that's different. But if you haven't got any of that, then why would you ever change number from what you get handed?
Yeah, and coming in, my junior number, and the number that I liked was 17, and Coons had that number, so I thought I was no chance of getting that. So I don't think I would have changed anyway. To get on the list and to get the opportunity and to be given something so special was important to me.
You would have played in a many Bulldogs back line against the Collingwood team with Travis Cloke in a forward line. Some linkage between the Bulldogs and potentially Cloke for next year. Would you endorse that pursuit if it indeed does go down that path?
I read that today, and it's funny, whenever that comes out that there's a key forward on the market, the Bulldogs are always the club that gets brought up. I think they say since Barry Hall we haven't had a key forward. We've got some good young guys coming through, but over the years I have spent a bit of time on Cloke, especially when he was at his peak. And at his peak, one of the hardest players to stop. Has a great tank, very strong, very good overhead when he backs himself in, and just that left foot of his, he can kick it a mile. So yeah, he's still got the tricks. Whether it's Collingwood or whether it's another team can get those bag of tricks out again. Hopefully it's... Oh, no, he's not playing tonight, so that's okay. But yeah, he still might be able to do that one day.
I know you got to get to a corporate function to speak, so thanks very much for dropping by.
No worries, my pleasure.
Just as you flick through the Wolfpack, Purple, and this is what our man Gaz used to do for a living, what I love is that they'll absolutely join in on whatever's being discussed. So, of course, it was Juddy's fashion sense earlier on, and then ship off. But then when a Nipsey wanders in and starts trying to claim that Australia aren't a clean and innocent drug-free country, some Nipsey in there tried to come in with that, then the Wolfpack's attention turns on to that Nipsey.
Has it?
And he gets pounded.
Well, I'm with
which
that
I absolutely love. So am I. Yeah. What I'm saying is they're very happy to listen to what we're talking about until someone takes a contrary view that they don't like. And then as a group, they just turn, which has got my absolute support. He's been banned at a peanut this month.
He's not.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Hey, Mason Cox just about to join us. Limited edition, by the way. 4-20 Triple M footy pie coming soon. Keep it on Triple M to find out more. I think the launch of that might even be next week. So we're looking forward to that.
Brett Crouch today. Jim re-signed with Adelaide Crows. 4-year deal all the way through to 2020. It's a good result for them. They got what they wanted with Josh Jenkins about a month ago and have now got Brad Crouch. They were their two big issues as the year unfolded, and they got them both. It's a good result. Tom Mitchell stays now firmly embedded as Hawthorn's choice by way of desire to have him leave the Sydney Swans and go to Hawthorn. Dion Prestia, it's known by Gold Coast people now that he will not be there next year. It's just a matter of where, and Richmond still remains heavily linked to him. And O'Meara, I get more confused about this situation every day.
Yeah, right,
receiving,
okay.
Having surgery, had surgery yesterday on the knee that has caused him problems for 2 years, but a different part of the knee that had actually caused the seriousness of the problem. So they're the big decisions still to be made. And interesting with Tom Mitchell, Barry Mitchell resigned his post as a forward scout for the Sydney Swans, and you can read as much into that or as little as you like, depending on which way you want to treat
it. I know Patrick Dangerfield did, Juddy, and there were, it seems, really special and specific family reasons why. But so therefore, he left Adelaide. But why would you leave that joint? That is as well-resourced and as well-run a footy club as there is in the AFL, I reckon.
Yep.
Adelaide,
I don't think you're leaving there. He's playing with his brother, and they look like they're potentially on the verge of some pretty exciting years ahead.
A young list too, so they're only going to get better.
And he's had a really good 6 to 8 weeks, hasn't he, Jim? He's probably the best 6 to 8 weeks of his career. Just gone.
Mason Cox has been good enough to join us in the box. Big Mace, hello to you, mate.
How you going, boys?
Very well.
Out with a shoulder. Let's get the reasons out first. What's happened?
Yeah, just a bit of inflammation and stuff from last week. Just injured in the first quarter. So
the body check at centre half forward?
Yeah, that was it. And they just kind of struggled throughout the rest of the game. And this week it's just kind of flared up. So a bit of an injection yesterday, and then just let it calm down this next week, and hopefully be all right for next week.
Do you, to play this game, and you're only in the baby sort of steps of your career, do you need to get bigger in that area? Have you got more weight to put on, do you reckon, to be able to?
Yeah, I think so. I think next year I'll probably work on that and just put a bit of upper body weight on and help out in the forward line, I think in the ruck too. So hopefully that all goes well.
What about Travis Cloke getting dropped again? A lot of people would have thought, with yourself being out through injury, that there might have been a spot for him, but it must be tough on him, and obviously you guys would rally around him at training.
Yeah, I didn't find out till a few days ago, but yeah, he's an amazing man. Like, I've got nothing negative to say about him, and I was kind of surprised, honestly, today, just given the forward line, but I guess the Bulldogs are a bit small also, so it's a bit understandable, but yeah, we all have things we need to work on. Travis, he probably needs to work on a few things also, and yeah, it's just... At this point, it's unfortunate, but that's footy. You know, you can't really do anything about it, and it's in someone else's hands.
Coming in as you have, you've got a lot to deal with, haven't you, on so many fronts. How have you gone with the status and the clout that your team, Collingwood, has in this town? And I suppose as an extension to that, the focus that comes on it when you get to round 21 and there's 8 wins only to the team.
Yeah, obviously there's quite a bit of media around us, and every day, you know, I'm reading the paper and something. There's always something in the paper about it, and it's got its positive things, it's got its negative things, but it's just one of those things you got to live through in life, and there's quite a bit of a scope on you, but yeah, at the end of this, end of the day, 8 wins is probably not where we want to be, obviously, so yeah, you know, you just kind of look forward and just every single game put your front foot forward and then keep going from there, but yeah, obviously it's not exactly where we want to be right now.
You don't come across someone as Mason as who reflect upon what you've done while you're still doing it, but if you were to, and if I can ask you to, just to analyse what you've done in this quite extraordinary year to this point.
Yeah, it's been wild. It's been a roller coaster. I've loved every minute of it though, and yeah, it's been quite an experience. Just nothing I would, you know, ever have dreamed of whenever, you know, I first came here, and all the stuff that's happened since, and how quickly it's come around, and well, I've just been grateful for every moment.
What's been the hardest thing? As we follow that question up, the hardest thing you've found since starting your AFL journey.
Oh, the hardest thing. I don't know. Probably just getting up every single week, and you know, you're pretty sore after all the games and stuff, and just getting your body right for the next week. And you know, the 6-day turnarounds. I remember the first, I think it's 3 or 4 games I had were 6-day turnarounds and 7-day turnarounds and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's just an extra day does do the body justice. Like it's amazing to have an extra day, and just you know, getting in and doing all the extra physios and stuff like that, and just being ready for the next week is, you know, one of the hardest things I think you have to do.
Mason, can I just cast your mind back to when Joe Biden, the vice president, was out? Now, did I read somewhere where you missed a game because you were part of everything that was going on with Joe at that particular point in time?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough. I had to have a chat with Barmy and Bucks and stuff, and we were playing Frankston in the VFL, and I was supposed to play VFL that week, and it was an emergency for AFL. And, yeah, I ended up missing the VFL game because I kind of talked to him. I said, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience and something I'll never forget. Like, I know Australian politics don't really – it's probably not as big to meet the Prime Minister or something like that, but it's something I've always looked at, and it's just, you know, like, it's amazing that, you know, something like this has come up through.
So what was your role? What was your role with the Vice President then?
So the first quarter I sat down with him, just kind of explained what was going on, told my story, and Matt Korchek, who's another American who plays for Carlton, sat down with him too and just kind of had a chat with him, and just kind of gave him an idea of what was going on, and he had actually understood quite a bit, so he knew like 6 points, 1 point mark, you know, kick and all that kind of stuff, and he can't say the finer details of holding the ball and things like that, but we all know that's up in the air sometimes, but he knew quite a bit, so I was just kind of explaining it to him and telling your story at that point.
And you're impressed with the job Donald Trump's doing over there, isn't it?
Nah. I can't get through one conversation without the presidents or guns or something coming up. it's been a whirlwind over there, and my family's actually in town right now, so I'm picking their brain of what's actually happening. It's just I can't believe it, to be honest. Like I couldn't believe he's a 1-for-2 chance right now at this point, really. So, anything is possible, I guess. It's, I don't know. Like it blows my mind every day just looking back, and it's honestly a bit of an embarrassment. But that's politics, I guess, and who knows what will happen.
What about Michael Phelps? This is a man who's won 22 individual gold medals. More than, I don't know the number, I think because it keeps changing, but there are plenty of nations at this Olympic Games who in the history of their Olympic involvement haven't won 22 as a nation. He's won it on his own.
Yeah, he said, yesterday he was at 21. I heard a stat that he was, if he was his own country, he'd be the 39th as far as rank of most gold medals ever won, which is just like ridiculous. And obviously, given the fact that he's going in the pool and he's got so many different things he can go in from the 100-meter to 200-meter to all that, there's quite a few he can win. But it's an amazing feat for a person, much less an individual. And it's just unreal. Like I look at his diet and stuff like that you hear about and how many calories he intakes, and it's just unreal. Like
he
the guy
crap,
devotes his
he?
Life. He eats, I don't know, like here and there, but – his calorie intake is like four times or five times normal human beings. Yeah. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous if you have a look at it. And he's dedicated his life to it, and you know, it kind of, it shows. Like, obviously, he wouldn't, you know, there's many other people that try to go for the same thing, and you know, they're, that's their life goal, to win one gold, much less 20, 22. So you know, it's just a it's just a testament to how much he puts into it, I think.
With everything you've learnt this year, have you immersed yourself into football itself and the culture of football?
Yeah. Like, I go to all the games and stuff like that, and you know, we do all the things with the fans, and I always try to stay after and say hi and, you know, sign autographs and stuff like that, and just meet the people. It's you know, to me, it's just a whole new experience, and it's an amazing thing. Like, I always talk about how dense the population of sport fans are here. I mean, there's 3 million people here, and I would say over half of them would be footy fans, you know. So it's just an amazing thing. I think it's probably the most densely followed sport in all the world, I would almost say, with 8 or 9 teams in Melbourne alone, and you just won't find that anywhere else. And it's just a crazy, crazy culture. And I try to explain it to people back home and things like that, and it's just one of those things where you just have to experience it. You have to kind of go through it to really get your head around it.
Hey, Mace, how many times since you've been here have you run into a fully grown man with a Cleveland Browns hoodie on?
Cleveland? I didn't want to say anything on air, but, like, what are you doing?
What have you, what have you
I've got a friend that plays for him, and I don't even think he's happy to be there. Like, he's getting millions of dollars.
It's one of the great franchises in world sport, Mace. I think you're aware of that.
They're rubbish, Jim.
Oh, gosh. Just stick to the Cavs. Just ride that wave while you can. All right.
Must admit, I did jump on the Cavs pretty hard, because have you seen Believe Land, the 30 for 30.
Yeah.
It is one of the tragic cities of all time.
Yeah,
Cleveland,
I was
when it comes to
over
sport.
50 years, I think, without a championship.
In
and then
any
last
form.
Year, fortunate enough to get one. But yeah, we'll see how they go against Golden State this year. It'll be the powerhouse. But yeah, it's I was kind of happy, I guess, for Cleveland, because it's not the greatest place in the world.
And LeBron's just signed for $38 million a year or something.
Who's this?
LeBron, I think it's
he just signed, I think, today or yesterday. So he'll be there for a bit.
Who do you support in the NFL?
Well, I'm from Dallas, so Cowboys fan. So.
Well, they've been rubbish for the last.
Yeah, they've been
years.
Horrible, which I'll admit. But I kind of grew up with the Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith kind of era, where it was you know, they won championships and things.
And
I was fortunate enough to see Emmitt Smith break the rushing record. I was at that game, so it's like one of those things you always kind of look back at the ticket stub and stuff. And I'm sure people from footy kind of have that from grand finals and things like that. And yeah, it's kind of like my, I guess, like an idol and stuff growing up.
Oh yeah, they did give you a nice ride. Hey mate, it's good to see you. So this is only a week, you think, this shoulder?
Yeah, that's the hope, just a week. So reassess on Monday and we'll go from there.
Great to see you. Good luck with everything coming up.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, buddy.
Mason Cox is a beauty. Juddy, as I've got you here, the AFLPA and the AFL have got to eventually come together and work out this CBA. Is it on track? Is it going to be bloodless? Where's it at?
Well, it just seems like it's a little bit behind schedule to where it usually is at this stage of the negotiations. And I mean, you probably know more about it than me, but... usually by this stage, the deal's been done and we're moving forward. So it'll be interesting to see how quickly they can sort it out.
Do you expect there to be any issues? Any, you know, the obvious striking threat thing always gets thrown up. Can you see a scenario where any of that's even possible?
Look, I think if you look at the pattern of behaviour from players, they have more and more involvement in decisions at their own club and across the competition. You see players sort of involved with list management now, with who coaches the team. I think it's a natural progression that they'll... want to be more involved and perhaps threaten a bit more seriously than the players have from generations past. But I still think it's very hard to see any players actually end up striking.
What about you, Damo? What are you hearing? Is there any sort of issues bubbling away behind this, or is it going to get done pretty sort of seamlessly?
There's more, the way I read it, there's more of an edge on this one. And Juddy's right, the fact that it's dragged out till, what are we now, mid-August, without a resolution to it. And what it is causing problems with, Jim, is CEOs and list managers who have to make decisions on contracts of players within their club and also the ones they can make to bring to their club. Because as it stands, they don't know what the salary cap increase is for next year. And that's okay in terms of being covered, because the new deal will have the AFL almost covering 100%. But what it doesn't allow them to do is to make offers with confidence, knowing that they're going to fit inside what they can spend. And so they're sort of speculating now. Some are basing it on a 10% increase. Some are sort of being a bit more conservative about it being a 7% increase. But it is causing dramas. And it might actually slow down the movement of players, which would go against what the players want too, which may even create more of an edge to these discussions. But I don't see them striking. And I don't question Paul Martian being so litigious about the way he's going. Wrong word, vigilant about the way he's going. But the desire for him and the group Juddy, to have a set percentage guaranteed and written down, whatever it is, 25, 6, 7%. Andrew Demetrio kicked that out last time, and Gillon McLachlan has every intention to kick it out next time. You've backed yourselves as a playing group, I think, into a corner when you go in with that as your stated policy. And because the AFL just does not want it, does it, Jim? And you've probably had briefings from even commissioners saying that's the case.
I think there's more... let's say movement towards it is not right, but I think there's more room to talk this time than last time around that. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. Philosophically, Juddy, my question is this. I think the average wage of an AFL footballer is somewhere around 330 grand across the whole spectrum.
Yeah, if we work with 300, that's about where it is now. That's including the first-year players. Yeah, okay. Yep.
So, and there are 800 and something players on list. Should that rise?
It's whatever the game can afford. I mean, if the game can afford to pay the average wage is 120K, then that's what it can afford. But if the money doesn't go to the players, it's going to go somewhere. You're better off going to the players than going to AFL junkets, for instance. So
true, but then what about the development of the game? What about getting more kids playing it?
I don't think there's a sport in Australia that would spend as big a percentage of their revenue on community development and future playing pathways.
And that might be why it's the best sport. You know,
it might. So we keep doing that, but I don't think it's like I don't think.
So you don't have a philosophical issue with it jumping to 400 and players who are not worth close to 400 getting it.
No, because the money's got to go somewhere. That's the point. If it doesn't go to the players, it'll go to the administration. And, you know, for a long time, we're the only sport in the world where the CEO of the sport was getting paid more than the top players. I wouldn't be philosophically opposed to that at all.
I think the difficulty with that attitude, Jim, is because 400 is such a large sum when we look at the greater Australian community, we can sit there and say that player's not worth 400. But if 400 is just the average wage... and they're an average player, they're worth that 400. Mm. So you kind of got to shift what you think your base values are when it comes to pricings in the game. But, Juddy, correct me if I'm wrong, just talking about the Player Association's push for a set percentage, I don't think the resolve has ever been greater than under Paul Marsh to be almost to a combative type stage when it comes to pushing this with the AFL.
Yeah, and he's probably got a reputation for being a little bit more militant than the previous leaders of the PA. And it is, you know, the major issue that they want to get done. And to be honest, I don't know why it's such a sticking point. If I was the AFL, I think I'd be quite comfortable having that cost as a variable cost. I think it would suit everyone.
But if they did that, isn't it an enormous leap from where the market is right now, Warrior?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to determine what is AFL revenue and what that would take in. And Juddy might have said it flippantly about the AFL junkets, but there's this massive, strong belief from the players that a lot of money just gets spread out nowhere knows. And that's the way the AFL likes it, by the way. And that's not even saying anything too controversial. They do have a lot of money come in, and no one really knows where it goes. But they will back themselves on what they produce to the public, and that is a very well-run competition. And one, Jim, and you're right to point out that the ground level and the grassroots, it's as well financed and run as any sport probably in the world at the grassroots.
And I know there's a hell of a lot more about to be spent on that too. I think the whole, you know, pathway, grassroots footy spend is going to be enormously added to in the next little bit.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, at the
country
minute,
footy, all those things.
At the minute, you've got big capex with GWS and Gold Coast coming in, and then the Women's Football League. It'll be interesting to see if this current group of players feels like they should have to underwrite that cost for the generations to come to benefit from it. That'll be an interesting.
And I guess the other thing, Purple, is the financial instability of still quite a few of the clubs.
Yeah,
you know, I mean that's a concern too.
Oh, it's massive, and it's why the AFL has tried to tackle this entire financial package as a collective. It's normally done with the players first, and then the clubs are dealt with, and then other people and other stakeholders are looked after. But they've tried to enter it more than a year ago now, maybe even 2 years ago now, as a complete circle, and the players are only just one part of that pie. And I think there's a bit of anger and angst about that too, Jody, as to that being the case. Now, they may not be saying this, but I feel that they felt that they should have been dealt with first, and then everything else spins off from that figure.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it'll get done, and boys will be playing footy next year, but it does feel like it's a bit behind where it usually is at this stage.
A young man debuting for the Hawks tomorrow. His name, Chief?
Ryan Burton.
And I understand you went down to Hawthorn, did you? And did you hand over the jumper, or what happened, Chief?
You know exactly what happened.
Is that what happened, Chief? Well, I just need to hear from you as to how things went.
Away you go. Do whatever you're doing.
Did you hand...
I did.
I can't imagine...
Went out and presented a young man with his jumper because he's making his debut tomorrow.
I can't imagine, Juddy, a more fitting Hawthorn legend to do that to a young power forward at the Hawks. Could you?
No, it's terrific.
You'd look at Dermot or someone, but there's only one man down there, Purple. So anyway, our man, the Chief,
he likes doing those things.
He does. That shows how important this young man is to the club, because most of these requests, Chief would say, ship off. But obviously, this young bloke is a real star in the making, so it's got Chief out of his chair.
And Jim, the fact this is the seventh debutant for the year.
That's it.
And he hadn't done the previous six.
And no interest.
Meant that he'd said no six times prior to this one.
That's it. Rubbish. This one, big power forward, more to the Chief's liking. First round draft pick.
Yeah,
so suddenly the sizzle that's required to get the Chief out of the Jaguar and out of the boudoir and down to Hawthorn, you're starting to get the picture. Yeah. So then he stands up, and a very eloquent man, and of course lots of public speaking experience. So this landed in our lap. This is a little zinger during the course of the presentation that caught our fancy. Have a listen.
There's lots of great stories when you look at players, even at this club. I mean, Mitch is a perfect example. Overlooked in the early drafts and had to bide his time and work hard. No one wanted a midget with the pace of your average turtle, so it worked really, really hard.
Just in the middle of a jumper presentation, Chief, you've decided to hand a little zing around.
You've got to understand the mood of the place. Right. You need to lighten it up. You've got to be light and shade, Jim. You know all about that.
Yes.
So we've got a little bit of light. But, I then gave Mitch a compliment. The point was he was considered to be that. Mm. And he's now one of the greatest players the club's ever seen. And it was just an example of players that have come through adversity and forged a career for themselves. And we're hoping this young man can do the same.
No doubt. Who did you... Be the Carlton or West Coast, did players come down and hand jumpers out past players?
Yeah, they did, but long after I was receiving them.
Right. So, but you were at Carlton. Did they get, say, Mario bought a lotto? Would Big Tats Lotto come in and hand a jumper out, or
maybe Andrew McKay? I bloody can't remember. That's bad, isn't it?
It is bad.
Yeah.
Especially the legends at Carlton.
Sticks would have done a couple,
Big
surely.
Chip Kernahan must
have.
Oh,
I mean, lots of them did them. Yeah, I just can't remember who gave me mine. But yeah, Sticks was there, and all the
Diesel.
Greats. Ange Christou came down one day, got a bit emotional. Cooter was a regular favourite. Diesel.
How did you go? Are you a devotee of the history of the game? Because at Carlton, I think more than almost any other club, that sort of late 70s to late 80s, the players they had in that era are legends of the AFL, VFL, let alone legends of one particular club, Jimmy Buckley and all of the boys through that, the Dominator. How did you go with all of that? Are you front and centre knowing them all, or did you have to elbow, a Chip Kernahan at some stage to say, who the hell's that?
No, I mean, it took a little while. You try not to go with the names too early, but obviously, Sellers McClure, you see in the press a bit, and the Dominator, and some of them did stood out, but there's, it took me a while to know who Jeff Southby was, and he's, arguably the greatest fullback to have ever played the game. So
Alex Marcoux, did he slide down?
Mate, one of the great blokes, Alex Marcoux. Had a couple of good nights out with Alex Marcoux, but they are a ripping group of fellas from that era, and enjoyed a lot of success.
Spiro Korkamilis?
Didn't come across Spiro, but it was always a lifelong dream to catch up with him, and still hold out hope that we'll catch up someday.
Oh, I love it. Whereas your West Coast is such a young club.
You've watched just about them all.
Exactly. The past players were, you would have nearly played with them.
Yeah.
Shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
Triple M rocks football.